Hello, everyone. This is the New Rules Podcast, and I'm your host, Dimitri Symes Jr. We often talk about military and economics on this program, but today we want to talk about political philosophy for a change. Following the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, liberalism emerged as the dominant and practically undisputed global ideology. As one American intellectual put it at the time, we had arrived at the end of history, and liberal democracy was the final destination. 30 years later, however, that no longer seems to be the case. To better understand the future of global liberalism and its alternatives, we've invited Alexander Dugin, one of the world's most famous political philosophers. Alexander Gilevich, thank you so much for coming on to the program today.
Thank you for inviting me.
In your view, is global liberalism currently experiencing a crisis?
So we could call it crisis, we could call it catastrophe, but I think that the situation is much more serious because we are not arriving to the end of liberalism, but we are arriving at the moment of the end of political modernity as such, as a whole. So it is not only the crisis of liberalism. It is the crisis of the global West, of the global Western civilization that passed historically through different stages. For example, in the 20th century, there was the great ideological war between three main political ideologies. All of them were the products of the Western political science, of Western modernity. That was liberalism, of capitalist society, that was alternative Marxism, that as well was Western ideology represented by Soviet Union, and there was nationalism as the third political theory or political ideology represented by the countries of the Axis. So all these three products of political modernity encountered themselves in the crucial 20th century, and liberalism has won. Liberalism has won over fascism and over communism. So the main idea of Francis Fukuyama, with whom I had the chance to debate sometime, his idea was right. Many mocked on him with his end of history thesis. Thought that was just exaggeration, but he was right. He was right on the level of the logic of the political theory of the West. So the liberalism, after the victory over alternative political theories, he revealed itself as the telos, as the final version of the Western modern political thought. And that was the victory over other as well Western political ideologies. So that was something really, really fatal. That was the realization of destiny. And having overcome all Western political alternative, that was the end of the history, or globalism, or Western hegemony, that stopped to be only Western. So the modern or postmodern liberal hegemony is cosmopolitan, is planetarian, is global, and there is no more the West as we knew it, and that is new global planetary network of liberalism embedded in all kind of society. And the problem now with the decline of the liberalism, it is not just the end of this phase. It is a kind of judgment, the final judgment over the Western modernity. And there are two points of view. There are advocates of this political modernity that now they represent only liberalism, because all the Western modern alternative were defeated earlier, and there are alternative point of view. So the part of humanity is against this thesis. So there are kind of people and countries and civilization, they have revolted against the end of history. They that have revolted against Western political modernity in general, and that is precisely where we are. So we are inside of this last judgment of Western political modernity that is presented as if it were the end of the catastrophe of crisis of liberalism. That is something much more deep and much more profound that we are dealing with. That is the fight the fight for the meaning of the end of the history. The history is ended. The Western political history is ended. Now we are fighting. We are continuing the fight for the meaning of the end of the history.
And how would you explain why is this crisis occurring? Because as you mentioned, it seemed like Western political models prevailed, with liberalism prevailing over its competitors. Why, after prevailing over so many formidable rivals, why is liberalism in the West experiencing a crisis?
I think because of the nihilistic nature of Western political modernity and of open nihilism of the liberalism. So liberalism, when it fought historically against totalitarian system of communism, of fascism, and this form of Western political ideologies, fascism and communism, were openly totalitarian. So liberalism, fighting against them, presented itself as if it has something inside, it has meaning, it has ontology, some positive ontology, a proposal to the humanity, fighting totalitarianisms, and promoting the freedom. So liberalism, until its final victory, was a kind of attractive, was seducing. So he promised the best, better life, better than in communist societies or in nationalist society. And when it won, and now he is prevailing, its inner totalitarian, anti-human, nihilistic, satanic nature is revealed. So the satanism and nihilism of liberalism was hidden, was implicit in the previous stages dealing with alternative that as well were totalitarian, but liberalism tried to show itself as less totalitarian or not totalitarian at all. And now we see that without these political alternatives, modern global liberalism becomes the pure dictatorship, totalitarian system that imposes on all the humanity the necessity to be liberal. So if you are not liberal, so you are doomed. So you are destroyed totally. If you are illiberal, you have no right to be illiberal. So the liberalism now shows its totalitarian features, totalitarian natures, and nature. At the same time, it stops to be attractive. It stops to be seducing. So it doesn't seduce anymore anybody. So it still imposes itself universally without explaining why. So that is a kind of mechanical destiny. It is some inevitable mechanical development of the human society that leads to abandoning of human nature, a becoming of human nature with the machines, with the new technologies. So technology is the fate, destiny of the humanity. It doesn't seduce anymore. It just imposes its anti-human and totalitarian totalitarian demands. So that, and if we consider, for example, a futuristic vision in the cinema, in the art, made by the West, by the liberal West, we see positive scenario. So everything is Mad Max, everything is Armageddon, everything is atomic catastrophe or atmospheric catastrophe or ecological catastrophe. So there is no other possible vision of the future in the modern Western liberal civilization outside of the global decay. So that is a kind of revelation of inner void of the liberalism, because now individualism has overcome humanism. Liberalism started with individualistic version of humanism, and now we are approaching with anti-human, post-human, transhuman individualism. That is precisely the political agenda of Biden, of Kamala Harris, of modern-day progressists in the United States. They are openly post-human. They are openly anti-human. They try to destroy the history, destroy all kind of identities, destroy the family, destroy the sex, destroy all kind of traditional institution. And that is openly an open program. It is just a kind of imperative, political imperative of destruction of humanity. So that is the catastrophe. But at the same time, this kind of catastrophe, it is not the kind of shipwreck of Titanic. It is just the terminal station of all political modernity that state face by face has led us to the point where we are. So it is not just by something casual, some unexpected mistake inside of the triumphal way of the Western civilization to the glorious future. It was from the beginning disguised path to the abyss. And when coming to abyss, approaching abyss, finally we reach it. No reason to be frightened, to be astonished. So if we had this goal, this situation as a goal, we could congratulate each other. We have reached the point of no return, and that is precisely the end of history, because the end of history is the other name, secular name, for the end of time.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, which I think we should delve deeper in, because most of our viewers are Americans, and when they think of liberalism, they think of individual freedom, individual prosperity, and technological progress. And when they look at the extreme left and the progressives, they view that as either the enemies of liberalism or a betrayal of classical liberal ideals. But you're saying that in reality, this is the natural consequence of liberalism. Why, could you explain in greater detail why that is? Why is it that inevitably, I guess, the philosophy of people like Thomas Jefferson and the founding fathers, how did it lead to this sort of nihilistic liberalism that we see right now?
So I think that in present days America, the main political ideological debate or the polemics is between two kinds of liberalism. Classical liberalism, or liberalism of the past, that is liberalism of the right, and new liberalism, or liberalism of progressists, progressive liberalism. So that is the other stage, more modern stage of the same process. So that debate is not about the goal or orientation of our movement, but rather the problem is in choosing the right speed or to not to accelerate or not the movement in the same direction. So conservative or traditional liberals, they still defend human individuality and human freedom. And new liberals, progressists, they already look into the future, and they invite to accelerate and go further and to liberate individuals from the humanity, because humanity in the postmodern philosophy is just the other name for God or fascism or traditions. And in my opinion, so we could not oppose two phases of the same process, because the train is going from one station to the other, and the past station is just past station, not alternative. It is not another direction. So everybody in United States is in agreement of the main orientation of the train: more freedom, more individualism. But they interpret this freedom and individualism differently. The old way liberals still link the freedom to human being, to human individuals, and progressives, they mock at that, they smile, they laugh at this awkward southern slave owners tradition to consider the human being, and they invite to accelerate the process to overcome that. But all that started historically with destruction of the social links of the human individuals. That started with individualism, with Protestant first, Protestant after that, capitalist, secularized individualism. Everything started with individualism. And that is precisely what is wrong in all this process. That is a kind of nominalistic, atomistic understanding of the being, and the abandoning of all kind of collective identity, traditional identity, new collective identity, traditional religious collective identity. Individualism worked through all last centuries of the Western and human history in order to liberate individual from any kind of collective identity. In that sense, left-wing liberals are much more in tune with the logic of this process, because we could not stop on the middle of this path. And if we decided already to liberate individual from all kind of collective identity, we did that with the church, with the estates, with the traditional society, with the empire, with Roman Catholicism, with after that with national state, and finally with the gender identity. And the last thing we need accomplish on this way is to liberate individual from the human identity, because it is the last form of collective identity. In that sense, classical liberals, they are less liberal than new liberals. That is all, and that is the debate between two phases of the same process. And the classical liberals don't understand, as long as I see the depth of the problem. They just try to delay, to stop acceleration, and not the process of individualism itself. That is why United States of America is doomed, because there is no possible alternative, and the right wing politicians and left wing politicians, all of them, they agree on the value of individual. And the left wing politicians, liberal, they are more consequent with this line that right liberals, who are very afraid that the catastrophe is approaching. Yes, it is, but you are guilty as well. Not you cannot put all the guilt or responsibility of left liberals. You are guilty as well, because you defend individual, and this concept was from the very beginning absolutely wrong.
I want to remind our audience members that you are watching and listening to the New Rules podcast. I am your host, Dmitry Symes Jr., and our guest today is Alexander Dugin. Alexander, we're talking about, I guess, the difference between classical liberals and new progressive liberals. And as I understand, the fundamental difference is this, that even though classical liberals may mean well and that they want to preserve some traditional values, some humanistic values, there's a sort of internal contradiction because liberalism wants to break down all boundaries, you know, all things that hold people together. And you can't have religion that way. You can't have traditional family that way, because it's one way or another viewed as a restriction that limits your freedom.
Exactly. Exactly. You put it absolutely right. So that is why what I mean.
And I guess, you know, the main argument in favor of liberalism that you see is a utilitarian one. They basically say that liberal societies are the wealthiest. They have the highest living standards. People are the most, quote unquote, free there. To what extent do you think this is a true argument?
So, if you put the matter, material well-being, over all other considerations, as spirituality, psychological feeling, intellectual richness, the high culture, maybe you have already committing some revolution or in the real realm of values. So, because traditional society as well was very attentive to material values, but all traditional society, they put the meaning of the material values under higher values, moral, spiritual, religious, cultural, intellectual, and the measure of traditional society could not be reduced only to material prosperity. So first of all, we need to say that if you put material prosperity over all other considerations, so you already are in fight with traditional society that do differently. They behave differently. So, but if we apply these material criteria to the Western society, now we see that this argument doesn't work anymore, because many other society, non-Western society, and preserving their own cultural and traditional identity, they live not at a large distance from the Western society. And if we put in consideration psychological aspect, the destruction of social ambience in the Western society, the growing devastation of the human minds and reduction of the of human intellectual culture to the simplistic reaction. So if we consider degradation of the of intellectual level of cultural level of Western society, I think that the result of this comparison and a result of the general appreciation of the positive and negative side of modern Western culture should be different. For example, there are as well more or less rich and comfortable and prosperous society outside of the West, and not only thanks to the Western strategy. So some countries accepting Western model come to total disaster, and the other using Western model or not using Western model come to opposite result, very positive. So If the capitalism and or Western values could not be regarded, it's obvious today, as universal rule to reach the prosperity and high level of material being, well-being. So there are many other levels. So I think this attraction, this doesn't work anymore, because there are other examples in the Asian society, the Muslim countries, where the people have the very, very high level of well-being, not being totally involved in the liberal decay, without gay marriages, without gay prides, LGBT, transhumanism, and so on. Why Western society is considered still to be rich, to be prosperous, because of inertia. I think the people who have experience to live in the West could challenge this assertion, this status that the Western world, Western society is best. That depends in other countries as well. For example, in China, there are partly communist China and totalitarian China without democracy, without all these elements of without human values and so on, human rights and so on, without individualism. They have reached a very, 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 very high level of the living standards without capitalism. So we should not reduce this problem. Poor society, illiberal society, rich society, liberal society. That is not true anymore. And I doubt now that, for example, the standard of living in the modern day Europe is higher than outside of it. So I think that Europe in the big decline, big decay. I could not judge United States. I was there once, and after that I'm under sanctions now, and I could not make my own mind about the real state of things. But when the Western society declares proudly that is the richest society in the world, it isn't true, because there are the other country with high quality of living. And if you consider the capital of Russia or big cities of China or some Eastern Islamic capitals, big cities, you see the standards of living not lesser than in the West. And in the same time, you can find the places in the West, in Europe or United States, that are terrible, in terrible state. For example, Detroit, the films that we see, that is total decay of all society. They are totally destroyed. Drug addict populations living in the streets. So
I think you bring up two very interesting points. The first point is that social fabric is everything, and that if liberalism undermines social fabric, then it doesn't matter if it provides temporary prosperity, because in the long run, you're not going to have social fabric and you're not going to have prosperity. And of course, the other interesting point you bring up is the multipolar reality, that this is not 1991 anymore, where the United States and Europe were so far ahead of everyone else in terms of GDP, in terms of GDP per capita. We're living in a totally different world. But I do guess that does still beg the question, if liberalism is not the answer, what is? What is the alternative to liberalism that we should all strive for?
That is very interesting. That is the point where my theory of forced political theory began. Forced political theory began. Because when we consider the failure of liberalism, if we consider the liberalism as catastrophe, and precisely catastrophe that liberalism was from the beginning starting destroy the social fabric, So from the beginning and arriving at the point of full realization of this program, that is just manifestation of the real nature of the initial plan. So it is not something that was occasionally happened. That was the plan to lead the humanity to state where it is now in the Western world. So it is not occasionally. And at the same time, if we consider that as failure, we need not to get into the trap of classical Western political alternative to liberalism. That is main point of forced political theory. If we come to the conclusion that liberalism is wrong, we are almost immediately falling in the trap of communism or nationalism. So we can criticize liberalism either from the point of view of Marxists, socialists, or from nationalists and fascists. So, and liberalism knows how to deal with these Western political alternative ideologies. Liberalism knows very well how to criticize them, how to demonize them, how to overcome them, because liberalism immediately confronting with these two kind of Western political discourse of the modernity, dealing with communism and with nationalism, could demonstrate easily the limitations, the totalitarian nature, the excesses of these political theories applied in the practice. So liberalism is immune to these intrinsic Western political criticism from the left and from the right. So if we refuse to be considered and to accept communism or fascism, so we need to get beyond the limits and the borders, boundaries of this political Western modernity as such. So we could choose something essentially non-modern and non-Western. For example, if non-Western, we could choose Christian Orthodox tradition, empire, tsardom. In our case, we could choose political ideas of Islam, of Shia Islam as in Iran, in Sunni Islam as in Arab countries and elsewhere. We could choose Confucianism as non-Western, non-modern political idea that transpires more and more in modern days China. We could choose Hindu tradition that has nothing to do with understanding of the society, of the man, of the economy, of the meaning of life, and of time, of space, of God, of matter, nothing to do with the Western modernity. And the Indian tradition has its own vision of how political society should be. The same for Africa. And now there are more and more people defending African identity in politics, in culture, in civilization, and as Camille Sibai, as Bok Bosong, Rinoko Rashidi, and many others who defend African political identity outside of liberalism, communism, and fascism. The same with Latin America, the same for all the humanity. So if we consider non-Western world, we should choose something not Western, something original, something natural to the identity of the non-Western civilizations. That is precisely that Samuel Huntington has had in view opposing a clash of civilization to Fukuyama's project. But we could suggest to the West itself something that should be alternative to its modern, to its political modernity. So, for example, for the Western people, we could suggest as a kind of a weapon, a stool of the fight against liberalism, neither communism nor nationalism as it now. So we should overcome this illiberal traditional position. We should be anti-communists and anti-fascists at the same time being totally anti-liberal. And how is it possible? It is possible because the history of the West and political history of the West didn't start with the modernity. It was pre-modern. There was a time, once upon a time, there was the real West, the real Europe, the real Greco-Roman civilization with high values, not low values as now. So we could get into the past to be inspired by pre-modern political system of empire, Catholicism, traditional Christianity, Greco-Roman political vision, not perverted by the modern atomism, liberalism, and individualism. Or we can accomplish a kind of jump into the future and to become totally postmodern, not postmodern as today, because modern days postmodernism is still modern. It is just continuation of the same discourse, of the same liberation, of the same liberalism, of the same individualism. The real postmodernity, the postmodernity possible but not yet realized. It is just possibility. So postmodernity that could cut the roots with the Western political modernity being Western. So it, I think that is very, very challenging to try to construct fourth political theory for the West, relying not only on the tradition of the sacred tradition of pre-modern Western as well, Western values, as traditionally suggested, by the way, but we could make different step. And try to imagine a totally new postmodern Western political theory that should have nothing to do with liberalism, communism, nor fascism, but at the same time it should be Western. It could be Western. So the Western anti-liberal, anti-modern, and not only pre-modern, but post-modern is as well possible. It is not easy, but I think you in the West, you have so many interesting authors that thought in that direction. For example, Martin Heidegger or Friedrich Nietzsche. They as well, they stigmatized the modernity as nihilism, and they try to suggest, to find, to open new ways out of that. Heidegger called that the new beginning. So the Western culture, the Western peoples could save themselves from this totalitarian liberalism, from hegemony, creating totally new vision, new beginning of the political philosophy outside of Western political modernity. Is challenging. I think that is invitation to create, to imagine something new, not only repeat or find inspiration in pre-modern phases of Western history. That is as well possible because in the Middle Ages, the people and the society believed in the eternity. They didn't believe in the God of the past. They believe in the God of past, present, and future, and eternal God. Eternity is not the past. It is as well the future. And if you inspire yourselves by eternity, you will could give to your future some ontological base that proceeds or should proceed from the eternal source of inspiration. All that was totally mocked at and forgotten and rejected by political modernity. And that was reducing the inspiration for political creation. So I'm a kind of Platonist, and I think that appealing to the highest principle, you can always bring back to the earth some inspiration and some new decisions for the future.
I want to remind our audience members that you are watching and listening to the New Rules podcast. I am your host, Dmitry Symes Jr., and our guest today is Alexander Dugin. Alexander, Russian President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly said that Russia stands against the sort of liberalism that we see in the West. And at the same time, many Western commentators say that Russia is a top threat to the so-called rules-based liberal international order. Is it fair to say that Russia is leading the global revolt against liberalism?
I think that Russia for sure started a special military operation as a kind of local conflict. So I didn't believe that Putin had in mind to challenge the global liberal civilization. But coming inside of this local conflict, based on the strategical interests of Russia and driven by understanding that NATO presence, NATO presence at the boundaries so close to Russia isn't acceptable for us. After that, the impact of this clash provoked deep inside in the reason of these events, tragical events. And I think that step by step, Putin himself arrived to the conclusion that we are fighting not only for our sovereignty, not only for multipolar world, but as well we are fighting against liberal hegemony and pretension of the Western liberal civilization to be unique, to be obligatory, to be hegemonic, to be universal. And when this dimension was manifested, so I think that the work inside of our government, inside of our political elite started great work to consider what is the real nature of special military operation that almost has nothing to do with Ukraine, with Kyiv. It is much more the real rediscovery of a real civilizational identity of Russia and understanding of deep nihilism and toxic nature of Western liberal system, as well as political system based on so-called rules that are defined only by one side. So that is totally, this rule-based order is essentially unipolar, because only one polar, basing on its own ideological, philosophical, cultural, civilizational principles, imposes these rules on all other humanity, and when these rules enter in the contradiction with their interests, they change it. So Putin revolted against that. He started this revolt in the kind of a limited way, in very very small way, as a border conflict with Ukraine. But step by step, he and the political elite started to come to the conclusion that it is the real fight and the real war against satanic Western civilization. And if we don't cut all the ties with this satanic civilization, using its technologies, trying to save some relations with the global institutions, but inside of our society, great work already began to inner liberation from the Western liberal rule-based order hypnosis. So we are starting to awaken ourselves from this pretended and false universalism of the Western models, and we are returning step by step to our own civilizational roots. And that is the new dimension of the multipolarity that we are discovering now. We didn't yet discover fully this dimension, deep civilization dimension of multipolarity, because in multipolar system, there are not only one pole that defines all the rules, neither all sovereign countries as United Nations. They could discuss their own understanding of what is principle, but only great civilization, great spaces could affirm and defend their own understanding of what is good and what is bad, and true or false. And for that, you have to have big space. You have to be civilization, not only the countries. So the real sovereignty in multipolarity belongs to the poles, not, and this pole doesn't coincide with country. For example, Eurasia, not Russia, Islamic world, not such or such Islamic country, China plus Taiwan, that is civilization, maybe the partly in the China and other places, India with Bangladesh and Nepal, so the Africa as a whole, Latin America as a kind of pan Latin American alliance, something like that. So only such big spaces could be poles, and that demands to return to the principle of each civilization with all the depth included in religion, in the culture, in psychology, in the roots, in the civilizational identity.
I guess that does beg the question, since you say that as a result of the Ukraine conflict, Russia is returning to its roots, it's returning to this idea of itself as a sovereign civilization. Could you tell for our audience members, most of who are Westerners, what is Russia's ideology? What is it fighting for? What sort of world is it trying to create, in your view?
First of all, Russia has its own understanding of the nature of human being. And that's not individual. For us to be human, it is not individual aspect. So humanity includes family, includes children. To be human, it's to be already collective. And to be human includes the society, includes the people, includes the state. So that is collective ontology of the human being. That is the special feature of traditional civilization and of Russian civilization. Second aspect, we have Orthodox, Christian Orthodox ethics. It is much more contemplative than active. It is much more stable than oriented to the expansion. Third, we are agrarian civilization, and we have still agrarian psychology linked to the earth, linked to the nature, linked to the natural ambience, and being put in the towns, in the cities, we are suffering. Our psychology is suffering. So we look, we Russians, we look like moderns and Western on the surface, but innerly we are totally different because we belong to different metrics, psychological. We have different understanding of death, of life, of God, of time, and we have a kind of deep identity that is neither red nor white, nor tsarist, neither tsarist nor communist, but in the deeper level, this right and left version of Russian identity, they coincide. That is very very difficult to explain, because we look like Western people, but we are not. We are different, deeply different from the Western people. So we are open. We have different ontology, different theology, different psychology, and our version of Christianity, from the beginning was different from the Western one. So I think that individualism is precisely what we lack. We don't have in our culture idea of individual. And if individual appears in our culture, it is rejected, it is mocked at, it is understood as some perversion and some monster. I presume maybe individualistic society of the West thinks and says the same of us approaching Russian. And people in the West now understand that we are different. Yes, we are different, and we are not like you. We are different, not better, but not worse. So that is very important. So to be different doesn't mean to be worse or better. That is the logic of the West, of the hegemony of colonialism. We are different, but neither worse nor better. We are just different, very, very different. We have different understanding, deep understanding of anything in the world, in the being, in the history. And it is not easy to understand, to get, because on the surface we are just exactly like you. But our inner man, as Saint Paul has said, he has introduced this concept of inner man. So inner man, inner Russian man is very, very different from the Western inner man. So our paradigm, our archetype, is totally different, and that is the basis of our special Eurasian Christian Orthodox Russian civilization.
I guess that does, I think many of our audience members will have the question. You mentioned that Russians and Westerners, on the one hand, appear very similar, but are different in fundamental ways. I think what a lot of them will want to know is, do you think it's inevitable for Russian civilization and Western civilization to be enemies, to be in conflict with one another forever? Or is it possible for these two civilizations, who are very similar but also very different, to find some way to coexist with one another?
So I fear there is the problem, because the Western identity makes equation. The Western culture identifies itself with universal. So if we imagine that West could limit its pretension to be universal to only to part of the humanity of the world, if the West could accept its regional, provincial, in some sense, nature, we could immediately have the basis and the territory for mutual understanding, for peaceful coexisting, and so good way of friendly exchange of the ideas, of the principles. But the problem is not in us. The problem is in the West, because the West could not accept the existence of other. In the eyes of the West, Western civilization and previous civilization, pre-modern civilization, modern civilization, post-modern civilization, there is unique feature that unites all these phases. That is absolute belief in universality of the Western values. So that was in the Western Christian part of the culture, in the modern Western modernity, that pretended to be universal, to discover universal laws of the being, of the science. And in modern day, liberalism neoliberalism, progressism, as well. So if, for example, you choose, Western society choose gay marriage, so everybody else should do the same. So, and if you don't accept gay marriages, LGBT, and so on, or feminism, or gender politics, or intellectual, you are enemy, you are under subhuman, you are a barbarian, you are savage. So that is the same racism of all that is characteristic for all historical stages of Western civilization. So West is racist, and Russia could not coexist peacefully with open racism that is menace, a threat that threatens our existence. And when Western speak with Russia, Westerner wants to teach Russia Russian how it should be, what models of behavior to have. And if we, and that is why we are fight, and that is why we are doomed to fight until the moment when the West will be all defeated or recognize humbly that it is just the path of humanity and not the universal pattern for all the humanity. So stop globalism and we stop fight with you. That is very important. It is not against the West as such we are fighting. We are fighting against the pretension of the West to be universal, to be the measure of things. We are fighting against the refuse of the West to consider that Russian culture, Russian political system, Russian society can be built on totally different principles. So the West doesn't accept any alternative to its own principles. So when West still follows this line of behavior, we have no chance to stop the war. But we are not alone in this fight, because Chinese sooner or later will confront the same situation. Africans, is Islamic world already is half awakened against this threat of the Western racism. Latin America, India, finally. So we are humanity. We are majority. We are majority fighting against not the West, but against the Western racism, against the Western hegemony and Western pretension to be universal. So that this pretension to be universal on the behalf of the West exists, the fight will go on. Only when it stops, we could think and dream about creation of the balanced and friendly and real multipolar system of relations. And we could promote friendship and exchange of technologies, of resources. But before that, we will fight until the end.
I want to remind our audience members that you watched and listened to the New Rules podcast. I am your host, Dimitri Symes Jr., and our guest today was Alexander Dugin. Alexander, where can our audience members keep up with your work?
My works are prohibited in the West. You can buy them on Amazon. You can't buy them in the bookstores, because I'm considered most dangerous philosopher in the West. So I'm totally canceled. I'm totally destroyed, deconstructed in the West. And you can guess why. So if, for example, they say I'm fascist, I just in this program, I have explained why I'm anti-fascist. They say, if not fascist, so I'm Stalinist, I'm communist. I just explained why I'm anti-communist and why are the reasons for that. Not I'm just defend myself. So I'm not communist, and neither communist nor fascist by the profound philosophical reason not to be, that I easily explain. So that is a wrong label. So I'm in favor of Putin. I'm considered to be advocate of special military operations. Yes, it is. Yes, that's right. But at the same time, they start to conceal me, to persecute me, to purge all the people interested in my works before all that. So I'm a target of the Western liberal propaganda before that's everything that started now. So the consequence of the events is reversed. So I was persecuted and cancelled from Amazon, from Twitter. Now it is restored. My Twitter account, by the way, is restored by Elon Musk. I am on Gmail, on YouTube, my account was destroyed. So I was cancelled by the West. But still, there are many, many articles and videos of myself in YouTube, in all other media, and articles published in my own sites. So my books, they continue to be published more and more and more, translated. I have written more than 70 books, and many of them are translated. Almost each week I receive the news that in that language my book is translated, another language, the other book. And so against all the restrictions, all the persecution, I'm considered to be the main public enemy of the West. And I think you guess why. Because in this conversation, I tried to explain in short terms, short words, my position, and it is not difficult to understand why I am so demonized, I am so criticized, I'm so blamed, and why they could not afford, the liberals could not afford the real dialogue with myself. They prefer to kill me, as they have killed my daughter. So they, and when you kill your opponent, that means you have no serious argument against, because violence, it is the weapon of the stupid, of the weaker, of the weakest, confronting with the intellectual attack that I could agree I lead.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Dugin, for such a candid and, you know, interesting dialogue. If you want to keep up with the work of our podcast for our audience members, first thing you should do is like and subscribe the video below. Additionally, we have Telegram, we have Twitter, we have all a bunch of different resources. You can check them out in the description below. Thank you so much for tuning in. Till next time.